Just remember that you're standing on a planet that's evolving and revolving at 900 miles an hour. That's orbiting at 19 miles a second, so it's reckoned a sun that is the source of all our power. The sun and you and me and all the stars that we can see are moving at a million miles a day. In an outer spiral arm at 40,000 miles an hour of the galaxy we call the Milky Way.
Welcome, come on in, it's Reasonable Faith with Dr. William Lane Craig. I'm Kevin Harris. Dr. Craig, we've been talking about this contribution by Sean Carroll to the new Blackwell Companion to Science and Christianity. We don't have time to cover all the article, but we are going to focus on the fine-tuning that he brings up, why this universe is the section, and he gives some examples of fine-tuning. Bill, what do you think is his overall view of fine-tuning when it comes to God and theories of the universe?
Well, he surveys nicely the various finely tuned constants and quantities that have been discovered by contemporary physics. And then he lays out four explanatory options for dealing with this fine tuning.
And they are, number one, life is extremely robust and would be likely to arise even if the parameters were very different, whether or not we understand what form this life would take. Number two, there is only one universe with randomly chosen parameters, and we just got lucky that they are among the rare values that allow for the existence of life. Number three, in different regions of the universe, the parameters take on different values, and we are fooled by a selection effect. That is, life will only arise in those regions compatible with the existence of life. And finally, number four, the parameters are not chosen randomly, but designed that way by a deity. What do you think about that survey there?
I think that's a good survey of the alternatives, though the first alternative, which is that life would develop even if the constants and quantities had different values, is not so much an explanation of the fine-tuning as a denial of it. It's simply saying that fine-tuning is illusory, that these constants and quantities, despite what most physicists think, are not in fact finely tuned for life, that even if the constants and quantities had different values, life would exist anyway in the universe.
Let's talk about that alternative then.
All right. Carroll says that he thinks that more credence needs to be lent to number one. He would like to deny the fine-tuning if he could get away with it. But I think it's important to understand, Kevin, that when we talk about universes that are finely tuned for the existence of interactive embodied life, we're not talking about universes that operate according to different laws of nature. Nobody knows what would happen in universes that operated according to totally different laws of nature. Rather, what we're talking about is what would happen if the universe were governed by the same laws of nature that we have, but the constants and quantities which appear in those laws were to take different values. For example, you were to increase the force of gravity a great deal, or if the cosmological constant were very much greater than it is, what would be the consequence? And I think what people many times don't understand is that the consequences would be catastrophic. If gravity were increased too much, the universe would simply collapse down to a single singularity, and life would be impossible, obviously. If the universe were expanding too rapidly, then stars and galaxies, much less planets, would never form where life could evolve. So that in the absence of fine-tuning, it's not as though we would have these dead worlds existing on which we can imagine life evolving. Rather, in many cases, there wouldn't even be matter. There wouldn't even be chemistry in the absence of fine-tuning. And that's why the predominant view of the scientific community today is that the universe does exhibit this remarkable fine-tuning. That is to say, the fundamental constants and quantities of nature fall into an extraordinarily narrow life-permitting range, such that if these constants or quantities were to be altered by less than a hair's breadth, the balance would be upset and life would not exist.
He lists several of these that he finds very compelling.
Yes, the cosmological constant is fine-tuned to one part out of 120 power. The initial entropy of the universe that he mentions is fine-tuned to one part out of 10 to the power of 10 to the power of 123, a number which is simply incomprehensible. So he certainly grants that the universe exhibits to all appearances this fine-tuning. And the burden of proof would really lie on the person who thinks that this fine-tuning is just illusory.
What about number two, the luck of the draw?
The luck of the draw. This is so interesting, Kevin, because Carroll admits that this hypothesis is not as plausible as the others, and therefore he doesn't go for it. He admits that if our universe is the only universe that there is, that the chances of all of these parameters falling into the life-permitting zone by accident are just so remote that they cannot reasonably be faced. And in so saying, he is going with the consensus of physical cosmology today, which finds it necessary to advert to a multiverse in order to multiply your probabilistic resources to get a universe that is fine-tuned like ours by chance alone.
This is option number three, then.
Yes, and that is option number three, that if you have many roulette wheels in many casinos turning simultaneously, then the chances are increased that in one of them, the ball will come up in just the number that you have selected. And so the third alternative is the multiverse hypothesis that the constants and quantities are randomly ordered across this range or world ensemble of universes, and only those universes that are finely tuned have observers in them. So, of course, observers will observe their universes to be fine-tuned for their existence. If it weren't fine-tuned, the universe would be dead. It wouldn't have any observers in them. So, given the multiverse, observers will evolve and exist by chance alone in some of these universes, and by a kind of self-selection effect, observers can only observe universes that are fine-tuned for their existence. So there's nothing here really to be surprised about. That's alternative number three.
Alternative three, by the way, Bill, this seems to be the biggest competitor to the God hypothesis.
Oh, it is, Kevin, and I think that's very important to understand. Alternatives one and two are not where the debate lies today among scientists and among philosophers. It is between three and four. We are dealing here with two very metaphysical hypotheses, an intelligent designer or a world ensemble of randomly ordered universes as the best explanation of the fine-tuning of the universe. So this is where the debate lies. This is the cutting edge.
And as you mentioned in the last podcast, many people would like to think that the multiverse is eternal, but our current models are just against that.
That's right. The Bohr-Guth-Vilenkin theorem that we mentioned in our last podcast applies not just to our universe, but it also applies to the multiverse, so that the multiverse itself must have had a beginning and cannot be infinite in the past.
Carroll seems to like number three. He's going to get into number four a little bit, but three seems to be the option that he wants.
He does like number three for obvious reasons. He wants to avoid theism. But what is so intriguing to me, Kevin, is that despite his predisposition to three and despite the tone of confidence in which the article is written, Carroll actually supplies the objection that shows why three is untenable. He actually gives the argument that shows why three won't work. And it's this, namely, it is simply not true that observers only exist in finely tuned universes. The universe does not need to be as finely tuned as it is in order for observers to exist. This has been a point that Roger Penrose of Oxford University has pressed very forcefully against these anthropic explanations of the fine-tuning. As Penrose points out, in order for us to exist, all you would need would be a universe that had an island of order no larger than our solar system that simply formed in an instant by the random collision of particles. As improbable as that may sound, it is incomprehensibly more probable than a finely tuned universe like ours. So universes in which there is this tiny island of order in which the solar system just falls together by random collision of particles to produce observers is vastly more probable than finely tuned universe like we observe. And therefore, they are more plenteous in the world ensemble. So if we're just a random member of the world ensemble, we ought to be observing a world that is an orderly world, rather, no larger than our solar system. In fact, do you know what the most probable observable world is? It is a world in which a single brain fluctuates into existence out of the quantum vacuum and has its observations, whatever they might be. That is the most plenteous observable universe in the world ensemble.
Are these known as Boltzmann brains?
Boltzmann brains, exactly, named after the 19th century German physicist Ludwig Boltzmann, who first noticed this problem. So remarkably, it is not in fact the case that the fine-tuning can be explained away as a self-selection effect of observers. In fact, the most probable form of observable universes will be these Boltzmann brain universes. And the fact that we don't have such observations therefore strongly disconfirms the world ensemble or multiverse hypothesis. And Carroll admits this in his article. He admits that the fine-tuning is far, far in excess of what would be necessary to sustain observers, and that therefore you can't really explain the fine-tuning simply as a self-selection effect of observers. So it's very odd. He likes the multiverse hypothesis, and he doesn't come out and admit that it's inadequate, but nevertheless, he does give you here the raw materials of an objection pressed by people like Penrose that show that this multiverse hypothesis is not going to work as an explanation of fine-tuning.
What kind of conclusions does he draw from that, that there is this excessive fine-tuning?
Well, he doesn't come right out and say, this shows that the world ensemble or multiverse hypothesis won't work. But what he'll do is he'll then go to alternative four, and he'll pull a move that I call, so's your old man. That is to say, he'll say, well, but the same objection applies to the designer hypothesis. The world exhibits far more fine-tuning, far more design than is necessary. So why did God or the designer so finely tune the universe?
Beyond what is necessary.
Beyond what is necessary in order for observers to exist. So he doesn't have an answer to this objection against number three, but he wants to simply say, well, but it also applies to you proponents of number four.
So's your old man.
Yeah. The problem is, Kevin, it doesn't apply to number four in the same way. The hypothesis of intelligent design doesn't depend upon a self-selection effect for observers. So while this consideration is a potent objection to saying, well, fine-tuning is just the result of a self-selection effect of observers, saying that the universe is more exquisitely fine-tuned than is absolutely necessary doesn't do anything to subvert the hypothesis of intelligent design. In fact, what it would show is that the designer is far more intelligent than even is necessary to make observers. I think the problem here, Kevin, is that Carroll and others like him who press this sort of objection are thinking of God perhaps on the model of the cosmic engineer. He's an engineer who will produce no more fine-tuning than is absolutely necessary to get the result. But why should we think of God on the analogy of an engineer? Suppose God is more like the cosmic artist who wants to splash his canvas with extravagance of design, who enjoys creating this fabulous cosmos designed in fantastic detail for observers. In fact, how do we know that there isn't extraterrestrial life somewhere in the cosmos that needs these finely tuned parameters in order to exist? Perhaps God has over-designed the universe to leave a revelation of himself in nature, just as it says in the book of Romans, so that someday physicists probing the universe would find the fingerprints of an intelligent designer, incredibly intelligent, incredibly precise in making this universe. So raising questions about the motivations of the designer for so exquisitely designing the universe just doesn't do anything to say that you don't need an intelligent designer to create the universe.
We run into that a lot, Bill, though, of why did God create so much space? I mean, what a bunch of waste. What a bunch of wasted space. Waste only applies to someone who has limited resources.
Yes, and, or limited time.
Yeah.
And God lacks neither. He has unlimited time, unlimited resources. This whole model of God is as the engineer who has to marshal his resources and use them only in the most efficient way, I think is just a very defective understanding of who God is, who I think is probably more like the artist who enjoys creating a beautifully fine-tuned universe.
The universe itself keeps on expanding and expanding in all of the directions it can whiz. As fast as it can go, at the speed of light, 12 million miles a minute, and that's the fastest speed there is. So remember when you're feeling very small and insecure, how amazingly unlikely is your birth. And pray that there's intelligent life somewhere up in space, 'cause there's bugger all down.